If you were to look at, don't do this, but if you were to look at James chapter 1, verse 23 to 26, you'd see this, there's a reference, a metaphor of the Bible being like a mirror. So let's say if you were to hold a Bible up and you were to use it as a mirror, fix your hair, whatever you want to do. But in this particular chapter, if you were to hold that chapter up as a mirror to your life, the point here is, are you living out the calling that is upon your life, the high calling that is upon your life, to be a man or a woman or a young woman or a young man or a child who does what? Loves. Are you living out the high calling in your life as you look at this passage as a mirror in love? Now, let's talk about that love. You have a definition of love, as do I. Part of the definition of that love is something that we've sort of concluded based on what we were told love was as we came up as a child, as a young adult. We've defined love as, in part, what we got from our father or mother or what we didn't. We have some definition of love that is personalized, that we've been conditioned to think is love. Some of us came from very functional families, very loving families, very nurturing families. Others of us came from toxic, dysfunctional. Some of us came from abusive families. But whatever the case may be, you have arrived at a definition of love. And when you say, I love you, in that I love you is that sort of that definition of love that you're coming from. That's part of it. But this chapter, when you look at this chapter now, you're looking at the definition of love. The objective definition of love. The purity of love. The authenticity of love. The richness of love. So when you look at this chapter and you hold it up to your life as like a mirror and you walk away from it, you know that you can surmise whether or not you're living a life of love based on this definition. The definition that you and I gather from our experiences and from life is called an eros love. Eros love. It's a Greek word. It is tainted more with I desire, I need, you exist for me in part. There's a selfishness to that love, and it started at the fall of man when Satan says, you know, you can actually be as like God. You can counterfeit this truth. And from that point on, we've been walking in an eros love. Eros love does not even make its way into the New Testament, but agape love does. And 1 Corinthians chapter 13 is about agape love, a God-ordained, God-originated, God-instituted, God-delegated, God-dispersed love that comes from him that is meant to be shared with one another. This chapter is not about loving God. As much as this service to this point has been about worshiping, being affectionate towards, being grateful to God, this chapter is not directly about loving God. This chapter is about loving one another. There is a difference. Sort of. Now, use Jesus as an example. You can count on one hand. In fact, I think there's only two, if not three, instances in the entire New Testament where Jesus actually expresses love to his Father in heaven. But you know he loves them. Here's something we got to figure out about God before we go one iota into this chapter today. Jesus says, if you love me, you will obey me. All right, let's take it a step further. He commands us to love one another. He commands us to love one another. Let's just not gloss over that. It's not up for negotiation. It's not really up for your opinion or mine. It's not up for interpretation. We are commanded to love. Now, here's the interesting thing. If we love God, we obey him, and he commands us to love. Let's put it together. If A equals B and B equals C, then A equals C. If we love one another, we are showing love to the Father. Yes, you can worship. Yes, you can do your devotions. Yes, you can sit on your back porch. And you can just enjoy the Lord. But if you also love other people with the love we're talking about in this chapter, you're at the same time loving God, which is the first commandment. For you multitaskers, you can love other people and love God at the same time. You get two commandments out at the same time. How efficient is that? All right, from this point forward, we're talking about loving one another. Hallelujah. All right, here's the verse, verse 4. Love is patient. Well, that was last week. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. Love is patient. Well, I encourage you to listen to last week's message. It was pretty decent. Love suffers long. Long haul. Love, agape love, is long term. The vows, the traditional wedding vows that were taken by probably most of the people in this room, for better or worse, for sickness and in health, for richer, for poor, all assume agape love. It would be ridiculous to stand there in front of somebody, and some weddings I don't do, by the way, because I know I would stand there and ask them to make a vow that they didn't have an agape love to fill. What? That's ridiculous. The wedding vows assume you have a love from God that you can share with the other person, because you cannot share a love with the other person apart from a love from God, because when the storms rise and the water goes up and the tide comes in and you got money problems, emotional problems, health problems, whatever the case may be, as our society would dictate, you flee apart. Eros love will not keep you together. It will satisfy you temporarily. You'll have to manipulate it, change it, but eventually it will not hold up under pressure. The vows of the wedding make the assumption that you have an agape love. Eros love says, I need, I want, I desire, and you exist for me. Agape love says, I'm here to give, I'm here to build up, I'm here to edify you. I'm here to be patient and kind. We need this agape love. The world needs to see this agape love. Love is patient. Then he says, love is kind. This Greek word for kind, it's a good one. It's mild. I like mild. You know, when I get up out of my car or truck, and I'm walking into my house at night after a long day of counseling, you know what I'm looking for? I'm looking for mild, man. Mild. I'm looking for my son's dog to get some agape love and some mildness. Mild. To show mildness. Tempered. To be tempered. Kind. The interesting thing about this particular word that is very fascinating to me is that, unfortunately, we can be kind with people that are total strangers, but to those we're most familiar with, not so much. Now, I get it. We know more about one another than anyone else does. We know each other's warts, blah, blah, blah. But we're not called to be unkind with one another, unmild. We're called to be kind. What kind of man are you, by the way? And what kind of woman are you, by the way? I hope you know you are the kind that people want around, because you're mild and you're kind with people. You understand that when you meet somebody, listen, I could go through, and I know a lot of the stories of the faces I'm looking at, and boy, don't you and I know some of them are pretty stinking ugly. And I mean that. I know the pain that exists in this room. I'm no stranger to your pain. You know that. I know that. I am the receptacle of pain. That's what I do for a living. I'm the guy that shares in pain. So I understand kindness, but I can also tell you this, because I understand pain, every single person, I don't care who you are, when you meet them, anywhere in the world, when you meet someone, they hurt somewhere inside. They may not know it, but they are hurting somewhere inside. And they, you know what they're looking for? Mildness, kindness. Now, don't bug out on this and say, you know, I'm just not my personality. Oh, your personality is Lord of your life. I had no idea. I thought Christ was the Lord of your life. Your personality is just not the way I am. Oh, forgive me for wasting your time in this commandment to love other people. Kindness. Generosity. Man, I debate whether to say this or not. This could really be problematic for me. I'm going to say it anyway. All right, so I'm expecting this package. Like, it's a very important package to me. And I tracked it, and it's supposed to be, it's in the post office. It's within the cement walls of the post office. I know this for a fact. So I go to the post office to pick it up, fearing that if it's not there between 10 and 12, well, the problem here is I'm not going to be able to get it till Tuesday. Ooh, Gary has to wait. Oh. All right, whatever. Anyway, there's a new guy. I'm not even going to finish. I'm not even going to say it. I'm gossiping. Forget it. It's not kind. I'm sticking with my own sermon. I'm going to apply it to my own life. All right. I never stopped the story in the middle, but that's it right there. That's all I'm going. All right. Kindness and freedom. Okay. Mamie Adams also went to a branch post office in her town because the postal employees there were very friendly. She went there to buy stamps just before Christmas one year, and the lines were particularly long. Someone pointed out that there was no need to wait in line because there was a stamp machine in the lobby. I know, said Mamie, but the machine won't ask me about my arthritis. Oh, that's kind. Alexander McLaren says, kindness makes a person attractive. If you want to win the world, melt it, do not hammer it. Isn't that true? Who are you going to melt this week? Who are you going to melt? Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not envy. Oh, this word is strong now, envy. This is real strong. It means to burn with zeal, to heat to a boil, to covet, to zealously pursue with some hatred mixed in there, like envy, like to want something you have. That's not agape love. That's eros. I want something you have. Like, you've got something, I deserve it. Me. Give it to me. I want it. Because you have that. Now you have the opportunity for the new job. I want the new job. I don't love you. I don't want you getting a new job. It's unsportsmanlike is what envy is. Envy says you got something, some possession, some relationship. I want it. I want your car. I want your home. I want your status. I want your popularity. I want this. I want that. I want your golf swing. I want your ability to flop a wedge onto the green. I want. Well, that's not love. Love celebrates that you have that, but doesn't hurt us. When you need credit, hey, listen, when you need credit for something too much, too often, that's not cool. That's not cool to always need credit. Agape sees another's needs and seeks to meet them and doesn't worry so much about who gets the credit. Jesus rejoices in the fruit of the disciples. When the disciples go out and they lead people to Christ, and they do these miracles and blah, 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 and they come back, what does Jesus say? Peter, tone it down, man. They might think you're the Messiah. No, he didn't say that. He rejoices with them. It said he rejoices for a whole hour over their fruitfulness. Are you building up and celebrating other people's successes? Maybe even at your own expense. You shall not covet your neighbor's house, his wife, or his servant, his ox, or his donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor. Envy is not unlike jealousy. Who has a problem with jealousy? This was big in 8th grade, 9th grade, 10th grade, 11th grade. Remember this? Jealousy. Petrified. Petrified that someone's going to take your girlfriend from you or your boyfriend. What's that? Insecurity. That's what that is. That's not love. Insecurity is void of love. Jealousy. Jealousy is like a knife in the ribs. It is an ever-present eros where I don't want you having too many friends. I don't want you going too many places. I don't want you doing too many things. I want you to learn too much. I want you to succeed too much. I don't want you to succeed in your job too much. Why? Because it threatens me. That's eros. That's not love that agape. That's not what we're commanded to do. Our life, this is going to hurt. When you look over the body of your work in your life, here's a question that you got to answer. You're not as successful as you could be. Or you may not be successful at all if you don't have a successor. Who's coming up behind you that you've discipled? What leader is coming up behind you that you helped mold and shape with an agape love? Think about that. Love does not boast. You ever met somebody like they're a person, but within them they are their own agent, their own promoter? You ever meet somebody who's a one-upper? Like everything you say, are you raising your hand? Better watch that in the auction later. That would have cost you $50 to raise your hand like that. This one-upperness. I commend Brian Regan to you as a comedian on YouTube. You want to make your weekend? Go watch I Walked on the Moon by Brian Regan. He's sitting at a cocktail party talking with people, and every time he tries to say something, someone one-ups him. Like, he can't get past everyone else has done so many more things than him, and he finally gets so frustrated with it, he goes, well, I walked on the moon. It's awesome. It's hilarious. So, and it's actually clean. So, he says, I walked on the moon, and they all look at him like, what? He goes, yes, I rode my lunar rover in the Sea of Tranquility. And he goes on and one-ups them. But we're not called to one-up anyone. We don't have to be first at anything. Agape love celebrates other people's successes. Then it goes on, love is not proud. Arrogant. This word arrogant comes from the word arrogate. It means to seize power we do not deserve. I see this going on in some men who came up in this ideology that everyone in their household is there to serve them at their beck and call. I don't know how that's working out for you. You may think it's working out, but I can tell you it's not working out. That's not agape. That's not agape. This seizing power that we don't deserve. Yeah, play a highlight reel in your head sometimes of Jesus' ministry. Here's what I see him doing. Washing feet. I can hear the water because no one's talking. No one knows what to say. I can hear the water. I see him sitting in a chair looking down at a prostitute, kissing his feet and rubbing his feet with her hair. I see him putting a hand on a coffin with the widow of Nain. I see him walking back there to see that little girl who's just died. I see him sitting and talking to the woman who had the issue of blood. I see him standing at a well in the hot sun talking to a woman who's a Samaritan. I see him doing things that don't in any way, shape, or form give him some sort of entitlement. Entitlement, like, I'm God, I'm here, you serve me. Like, I'm the big kahuna, like, you do what I say. I see him allowing people to make up their own minds. I see him affording people the freedom to live their life the way they choose to live. I see him celebrating their successes and just joyously laughing inside as some blind guy runs out into the street and just like celebrates his newfound vision. I see Jesus doing those things. An arrogant man, an arrogant woman. So it has this sense of entitlement. The whole culture that we're seeking to reach right now is entitled. Entitled. And they're looking for agape. They're looking for agape. Because the thing with entitlement is you always have to go a step further to make a point. You always have to outdo yourself. After a while, people become like, are you serious? And then you have to go further. You say, well, yeah, they're serious. Like, it's about me. And Paul goes on to say, it's not proud. Let puff up, inflate. The actual Greek word there means windbag. Anyone ever calls you a windbag? That's a problem. That's not a good thing. A young woman asked for an appointment with her pastor to talk with him about a besetting sin of which she had, and she was worried. When she saw him, she said, Pastor, I have become aware of a sin in my life that I cannot control. This is terrible. Every time I'm at church, I begin to look around at the other women. And I realized that I'm the prettiest one in the whole congregation. None of the others can compare with my beauty, she says. What can I do about this sin? The pastor replied, this is great, man. I gotta write this down. Mary, that's not a sin. That's just a mistake. That's great. That's just a mistake. Be not proud of race. Face, place, or grace. Let me say it again. Be not proud of race, face, place, or grace. Charles Spurgeon. What is your personal Now let's get personal. What is your personal capacity to love with an agape love? If we each in our own way got a hold of the vast potential that exists for a marriage, for a family, for a community, for a church, for a nation, who began to love with a selfless, edifying, agape love. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. You'd have to have six church services. Six on a Sunday. Sanctuaries wouldn't be big enough. The agape love of God. What's your greatest dream and your greatest goal? You know what it should be? To have a great faith, but not for faith's sake, not for what faith could bring you through prayer. A great faith that would lead to an even greater love. Faith, hope, and love, but the greatest of these is love. To have a great faith as a man or a woman that your grandchildren would look back on and say, man, they had a great faith. What did they believe God for? Miracles? Provision? Yes. Like George Mueller? Yes. They had great faith, but no, I don't even want to tell you about all the things they believe God for, except for the number one thing they believe God for. Agape love. Holy smokes, now we're talking. To have a great faith that leads to an agape love. Oh, wow. Of all the things you could have chosen, well, that's the greatest. Not hope. You need the faith to get to the agape love. And once you get there, whoo. Life, man. You know what? You know, I'm starting to figure this out. You get up in the morning, you start your day, and the real thing that you're trying to do is say to God, crucify the old man in me. Can we put him down today? Can we annihilate him today? Can we make a cadaver out of that area of my life that's causing me the problem today? Can he die today? Because I want some new life in Jesus Christ with some agape love. Can you kill the Eros love today in Gary? There's a prayer. Can you exterminate the selfish, seedy, manipulative, controlling, sarcastic Eros love in me, please? That's a disciple. And can you replace it with a never-ending, suffering, long, edifying, building up, selfless, sacrificial, celebratory love for other people today? And in so doing, Father, I'm loving you. Wow, what a life that would be. Oh, imagine what would happen if a guy could lead a congregation into that kind of love. Woo! Man, that's incredible. Agape. What were you taught? Where along the line, what was it that you caught? And are you satisfied with that definition? Or could we build on that? Oh, the Christian life is a call to die. Kill that old man in me. Kill that old Eros, immature adolescent in me. Sooner than later. I wonder Paul's so fired up. Listen to this. I've been crucified with Christ. It's no longer I who live, who Christ who lives in me. Agape love. Man. Pick up your cross daily, deny yourself, and follow Christ. Agape love. And then I can tell you what, I don't want anything from you. I don't want to cost you anything. I just want to celebrate an absence of envy and jealousy and pride. I have plenty of power in Christ. I don't need a power I don't deserve. And I don't need to come on strong. I can be mild as the day is long because I got nothing but patience and love for anyone I'm with. And even the people I am most familiar with would be taken aback by my level of kindness. Wow. I figured as long as you came over here, we'd discuss it. Agape love. Now, for those of you who don't, I don't know where you're at. See, I don't know where people are. So you're not at that place. You know, you say, you know what? I don't know about what you just said, but I can tell you this: I've been operating on some arrows. I get the arrows thing. I've been doing that. My wife and I have eros love. We got married in eros love. Never got agape. We said the vows the day we were married that were based on agape, but I now realize we did not have a love that day to actually fulfill them. We set ourselves up for failure. I now realize that I need this Christ of which you speak because he has for me the agape love I need to give to my wife. Because I know that the absence of that agape love is pretty ugly. It's full of strife and discord and envy and insecurity and fear and control and manipulation, and I'm sick of it. I'm empty. I am empty. Well, there was a time when I was the most jealous person in this room. I could assure you that. And I can also assure you I was the single emptiest person that I ever met. And I can assure you that the day came when I said, I no longer want to be who I am. I no longer want to be who I am. And this God of whom you speak tells me I can be someone else, that I can get a do-over, that I can get born again, start the whole process over again. I'm a player on that. I had no idea what I was signing up for. But there was a funeral and a wedding the same day. I was joined with Christ, and part of me got crucified that day. Had to. I couldn't struggle with myself my whole life. He had to exterminate part of me. I couldn't do it. I couldn't. Everywhere I went, I was with myself, and I didn't like myself. I'm always with someone I can't stand. Let's kill that dude. So God did. I don't know where you are in your faith. I know where you are in terms of love. You want it, and you want it bad. The question is, are you willing to do anything to get it? Like surrender your life to Christ? If not, you don't want it that bad. Keep suffering. Wait till the time is right. I'm going to sit here and manipulate you into some sort of falsified acceptance of Christ. You wait till you're ready, but when you're ready, be ready, because he's coming to fill your life with grace and forgiveness and love and mercy and wisdom, his presence, his leading, his guiding, his conviction, his patience, his grace. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Why you'd want to wait, I don't know, but wait if you have to. Just don't wait too long.